Thank you very much. Hello, Yorkshire. It's great to be here. I was really pleased when Lindis got in touch and asked me to come up to this event, and it's so amazing to see so many people here, to see people from so many different places as well, to be here to campaign on an issue that is very topical at the moment, but that is always an important issue, even if it's not in the news as much as it happens to be just at the moment with Edward Snowden and the sudden revelation to a lot of people that the words NSA, the letters NSA, the National Security Agency, are maybe something that they should worry about. The guys who've been running this nominally RAF base here behind us since 1966, it transpires. So I came up from London this morning. I left my house late morning, so if something extraordinary has happened to do with Guantanamo in the last however many hours that is, I won't actually know about it. I did think about switching on my computer and seeing whether I could get some Wi-Fi from these guys, but maybe not. I was very delighted to be asked to come and speak on July the 4th, because the issue that has dominated most of my life for the last 7 years is the prison at Guantanamo Bay in Cuba run by the United States. And today, July the 4th, is the day that Americans are celebrating their freedom from the tyranny of the British monarchy 237 years ago. And I'm not sure whether there'll be much in the United States media today about Guantanamo. I suspect that there will be very little, which is very disappointing, because on the day that Americans are celebrating their independence from tyranny, a grave example of tyranny on the part of the United States government is being exercised at Guantanamo Bay. One of the hallmarks of tyranny being the imprisonment of men indefinitely without charge or trial, which is what's happening to all but three of the men still held at Guantanamo who have been through some sort of legal process. There are 166 men at Guantanamo, and all but those three are being held indefinitely without charge or trial. A great shame. That would be bad enough that the United States is holding people against the values it claims to hold, that civilized countries don't hold people indefinitely without charge or trial. That's something that dictatorships do. But I have to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, that the United States government at Guantanamo is doing something even worse that dictatorships don't even do. When dictatorships throw you in the hole, throw you in a dungeon and throw away the key, they say to you, that's it, you're never getting out again. Don't expect any kind of due process. You're not getting a trial. We're just locking you up. That's it. You're going to die in this hole. The United States, it transpires, with 86 of these 166 men at Guantanamo, said to them in January 2010, guys, what we did is that we convened a task force, a Guantanamo Review task force established by President Obama, who had just come into office. And this consists of officials from all the relevant government departments, the main government departments, Defense, Justice, State Department, representatives of the intelligence agencies, the CIA, the FBI, many of the large number of intelligence agencies that the United States has. And we have reviewed your cases throughout 2009, and we have decided that 86 of you are people that we no longer wish to carry on holding indefinitely or to put on trial. When we can facilitate it, they were given papers that said, when we can facilitate your transfer out of this prison, that will be happening. And these men are still there. Now, you know, to his credit, President Obama has released around 70 people since he came into office. But his task force, when reviewing these cases, said to 86 of these 166 men who are still there, we do not want to carry on holding you indefinitely. Once we can arrange how to get you out of here, you will be leaving. This is the bit that the dictators don't do when they consign you to indefinite detention without trial. They don't waltz up after several years and say, oh, by the way, we had a really nice review process and you guys are going home. Oh, hang on, it's not politically convenient to release you, so we're not going to do. Having got your hopes up, we're going to dash them. That's the disgrace. That's the disgrace that President Obama should be waking up to every damn morning saying, hang on a minute, what have I done? I told these people I didn't want to hold them, and then it turns out that I lied to them. He won't even admit that he's lying. He just says it's politically difficult, that it's Congress's fault. Now, it certainly is, to some extent, the fault of the United States Congress, a place that I have to say makes our own House of Commons look not as quite as bad as it should do. I'm not going to use the word good or anything like that when it comes to the House of Commons, but the United States Congress really takes the biscuit when it comes to corruption and ineptitude and the exploitation of the fears of the populace. That's what really they've been good at since 9/11. It's playing the fear card for electoral advantage. Now, what happened is that, you know, President Obama, I'm sure we all remember, came into office and almost immediately promised to close Guantanamo within a year. You know, spectacular failure that promise turned out to be. But he made this promise, and then he set up the task force, and then he didn't really do anything. And into that vacuum stepped the Republicans, and also a number of his own party, the Democrats. But it was driven particularly by Republicans, who decided that the fear card that Dick Cheney had left behind when he left office with President Bush was one that they could dust down and use, because keeping the American people scared is a good idea for them electorally. So they started playing on President Obama being weak on terrorism, and they started imposing restrictions on his ability to close the prison. So they passed legislation preventing him from bringing any prisoners to the U.S. mainland for any reason, to face a trial, to be imprisoned on the U.S. mainland so that Guantanamo could close, to be freed on the U.S. mainland, anything. They banned it outright. You cannot bring prisoners from Guantanamo to the U.S. mainland. That makes it difficult to close Guantanamo. In the last couple of years, the Congress has added, they keep adding to their list of restrictions on the president. So what they've done in recent years is that they said that unless the president gets the Secretary of Defense to certify that if a prisoner is released, there is no way that they will be able to get involved in any kind of terrorist activities against the United States, then they cannot be released. It's a certification that you can't actually make to promise that somebody isn't going to do something in future that you don't know whether they're going to do or not, unless you were to either kill them or send them back somewhere where they were going to be imprisoned forever. Neither of which were options. So it's an impossible position that they put the president in. Congress also said to the president that he cannot release a single prisoner to a country where they allege a single prisoner has engaged in activities against the United States. So say someone from Saudi Arabia had allegedly engaged in terrorist activities against the United States after being released from Guantanamo, then nobody from that country can be released in future. When they first came up with this, I compared it to my American friends when I was over there on a visit to the U.S. domestic prison system and said, how would it be if, you know, they release someone from California from prison and he goes and commits a crime, and they say, well, that's it then. We're never releasing anyone from California from prison again. How would that go down? And it turns out that would go down with the most raging right-wing lunatic fanatics, but not with anybody else. But with Guantanamo, no, apparently that's fine. So, these are obviously very, very difficult hurdles placed in the way of the president. And it is understandable that he's been put in a position where he and the Secretary of Defense would have to release people knowing that if somebody did anything to attack the United States after being released from Guantanamo, it would all come on their heads. The responsibility would be on them and not on Congress that has raised these obstacles. But what the president hasn't been really telling anybody is that there is a waiver in the legislation which one of the senior Democrats, Senator Carl Levin, the head of the very powerful Senate Armed Services Committee, inserted into this legislation that makes it difficult for him to release prisoners. The waiver allows the president to bypass Congress completely if he believes that it is in the interests, the national security interests of the United States. Now, if you've been watching the news lately, you will know that at the start of February, the men at Guantanamo, in despair at ever being released, began a hunger strike. That hunger strike is about to enter its sixth month. There are, according to the prisoners, 120 of the 166 men are on hunger strike. Even according to the US authorities, which began by saying that no one was on a hunger strike apart from a handful of long-term hunger strikers, the numbers have edged up as the months have gone on. Even they admit that 104 of the men are now on a hunger strike and that 45 of these men are being force-fed. They are strapped down in a restraint chair twice a day and force-fed with a tube that goes up their nose and into their stomachs. That's a terrible thing to be happening on any day of the year, but just let's revisit the 4th of July thing that's going on and think about all those Americans patriotically waving their flags today and celebrating how great they are. This stuff's happening, guys. That's not so great. You really need to sort this out. And today is the day that that needs sorting out. But these men on the hunger strike, in despair, are waiting for some action from President Obama that doesn't seem to be coming. Now, President Obama took months to respond to the hunger strike. He then responded to questions at a White House news conference in April, I believe it was. And then on May the 23rd, he delivered a major speech on national security in which he touched on all kinds of issues, America's drone program, for example, and also spoke at length about Guantanamo. His eloquence at describing how awful Guantanamo is cannot be beaten. He is a master of eloquently explaining why what the country he is the president of is doing is wrong. It's horribly, horribly wrong and a disgraceful shame. But he hasn't done anything about it yet. He needs to find the political will within himself to do something that may temporarily be politically uncomfortable because it will aid his political enemies in criticizing him. But that is right. And if you look at the wording that he said on these two occasions that he spoke about Guantanamo, he explained that. It is in the national security interests of the United States to close Guantanamo. The waiver that he has allows him to do this because he said Guantanamo is a place that should never have opened. Because he said that it is a shame and a disgrace. He said, how is it going to look to history that we allowed these things to happen? You have to tell us that, Mr. President, because it is all in your hands to do something about it. When the hunger strike started in Guantanamo, the majority of the prisoners were living in Camp 6. Now, there are throughout Guantanamo's history, there have been a variety of different blocks that where the men have been held. Since about 2006, which is when they built Camp 6, that's where the majority of the prisoners have been held. And Camp 6 is one of two blocks in particular that are modeled on American domestic prison blocks. Camp 6 has communal areas, which for many years were not used because there had been three deaths in Guantanamo in June 2006, which the Americans claimed were suicides. That's a disputed account. But at that time when there was trouble in Guantanamo, this is 7 years ago, they didn't allow the communal areas to be used. Now, when President Obama came in, I have to say that one of the things that he recognized was that maybe it would be better to improve the living conditions for prisoners who were not causing trouble to the authorities. And for several years now, the people in Camp 6, for several years after that decision made by the president, the people in Camp 6 were allowed to mingle during the daytime. They were allowed to spend quite a bit of time together. That stopped a few months ago because of the hunger strike, because the prisoners were organizing resistance to the authorities in Guantanamo, not just to be annoying, but to try and prove their point. They're not trying to starve themselves to death just to be annoying. They're trying to do it because they want justice and freedom. When the authorities were trying to control the hunger strikers, they came in early morning on a Saturday morning, there was violence, and they locked everyone down in solitary confinement. So since that time, and this is over 2 months ago, the men are all now back in solitary, and all that punctuates their solitude is if they're pulled out a couple of times a day to have all this horrible force feeding happen to them. Now, you know, this solitary regime, which America practices with horrible abandon in its own domestic prison system, where, you know, tens of thousands of people at any given day are held in solitary confinement, and people are held in solitary confinement for decades. It's something that comes easily to the American institutions, it appears. But think about this in Guantanamo, that the only reason that these men were on a hunger strike in the first place was because they were in despair about the situation in which they were held. They were in despair about ever being released, if they were told they were going to be released, or getting justice if they were told at some point by the government, we're going to put you on trial. They were in despair. And they have now been put back into solitary confinement with only force feeding to punctuate it. How much can you put people into despair to be doing that? Now, we've heard a lot of discussions about the issues, the moral and ethical issues surrounding force feeding. Certainly, force feeding mentally competent prisoners is not something that is acceptable to medical authorities or human rights groups. It is defined as torture, and I believe that that's accurate. But I also completely understand why the United States government is not going to allow prisoners to die by starving themselves to death in Guantanamo. The irony is apparently lost on them that they don't want to stay alive when their lives are worthless because of the lack of justice and the lack of freedom. But there is a bigger political issue here, and again, it comes back to the president. If the president wants somebody else to be in the room with him, okay, the president and the Congress. But these are the only people that are responsible for the hunger strike, the way these people are being treated, and how to bring it to an end. I wish I could give you a cheerful message about how this is all going to end. I do believe that Guantanamo will one day end. I do believe that fundamentally the Obama administration accepts that this is a legacy issue inherited from the Bush administration. It's why they've resisted every opportunity to send new people into Guantanamo. That's a good thing. But they are showing no ability to resolve this issue. And I think that they have been lucky so far that in the 5 months of the hunger strike, no one has died. Now, they're probably not seeing it that way, because there is a very shocking statistic from Guantanamo, which I'll share with you, which is that a prison-wide hunger strike began in the summer of 2005, which involved a significant number of prisoners, and was finally stamped out by the authorities in January 2006, when they imported the first restraint chairs, the ones that they tie people in so that they can force-feed them. Now, there's a man in Guantanamo who was on that hunger strike that started in July 2005, and he hasn't stopped since. And he has been force-fed since the restraint chairs arrived in January 2006, and he's still alive. So they know they can keep hunger strikers alive. I don't know what state this man's body must be in to have been able to endure that. I have the feeling that mentally, he's reached a place where he's engaged in this struggle against his captors where it is the only thing that he can do. But, you know, that's very difficult for me to conceive of, that somebody's been on a hunger strike for 8 years. But it means the authorities know that they can keep people alive. That isn't going to last forever. Something is going to happen and someone is going to die. The way it stands at the moment, all of those deaths will be on President Obama's head until he chooses to do something about it and release prisoners. I wish there was something that I could say to you as well about how we could get one particular man out of Guantanamo. That's Shaka Armour, the last British resident in the prison. Because it turns out in documents that were recently released about the task force's decisions about the prisoners, that the US authorities, it seems, wanted to send Shaka Armour back to the country of his birth, which is Saudi Arabia. Now, Shaka Armour was a legal British resident at the time of his capture. He had permanent leave to remain here. He's married to a British woman. He has four British children. The British government may want, along with the Americans, to send Shaka Armour back to Saudi Arabia because he would then be shut up and would not be able to talk about what happened to him. And this man is the most passionate and eloquent defender of human rights. You know, the Americans got exactly the wrong person with Shaka Armour. This is a big-hearted man who cared about injustice and about others. That's why he was in Afghanistan. And yet they're still holding him. And yet they want to send him back to somewhere where he won't be able to talk about what they did to him because he has suffered for being so outspoken. But I think that the British government knows deep down that us, all of us, and the lawyers, the human rights lawyers in this country, and the journalists in this country, the mainstream journalists and editors at places like The Guardian and The Independent and Channel 4 News, that we have enough outrage in this country that if they tried between them to send Shaka Armour back to Saudi Arabia, rather than to bring him back to South London where his wife and family are waiting for him, that would be a PR disaster for them. But I don't know what it takes to get him back. At the moment, there's nothing I can say to you to say what the key is to getting people out of Guantanamo. But we keep pushing. We have to find a way to really keep homing in on President Obama because he's the one. He's the one who people say President Obama's favorite saying is, keep my options open. This is a man for whom political courage is not actually his primary impulse. And at the moment, he's keeping his options open. He said he was going to start releasing prisoners from Guantanamo. But keeping his options open means that actually he's carrying on choosing not to release prisoners from Guantanamo. So let's write to him. We can all do that. We can all do that. And we can also, you know, write to the British government, bombard the British government about Shaka Armour. I'm really pleased to be here for the first time. You know, maybe I'll come again. And I hope that at some point when I come again, I will have better news about Guantanamo and that we will at least have seen these 86 cleared prisoners released. But thank you all for coming here. Thank you for listening. Thanks.